And I remember the guy, this woman said, this is the home of Rabbi Samuel Salant. So his name is not Samuel, I mean, his name is Shmuel. But anyway, so we sort of smiled. And then during the break, I said over the guy, I said, see this young lady I'm with? This was Rabbi Salant's great-great-granddaughter. Oh, she got so excited. When we started, she told everybody. So everybody wanted to take a picture with Nancy. Because right in front of the house there was a cute thing. And her father, Hansi's father, Moshe Bard, was born. If Hansi had been born in Jerusalem, she would have been the seventh generation of Yerushalmi. She's the first generation of her sister and her brother.
Where did the Salants come from originally?
Originally, came, I think, from Europe, Poland, and settled up in Tzfat, and then came down to...
About that year, generally?
Probably in the 1800s. And my father-in-law was born in Yerushalayim, and my mother-in-law also was born in Yerushalayim, and they were married there. And at the time of the First World War, the Turks were conscripting Jews to fight against the Allies. And my father-in-law was in the yeshiva at that time. He was quite a scholar. And he and several others, about four or five of them, one of them was Rabbi Moshe Shapiro, who was a rabbi in Atlantic City for many, many years. That's Dina Chin's father. Dina Chin's father is Rabbi Moshe Moshe Shapiro. And he and my father-in-law and a few others escaped, got out of, left Yerushalayim. There's no Yerushalmi in those days would ever leave Yerushalayim. I have a cousin who to this day will not leave Jerusalem. Born there and never leave. But they came here and they were all scholars and almost all of them went into the rabbinate except my father-in-law, who went into business. My mother-in-law was related to Rokeach, Rokeach, mm-hmm. or they call it Rokeach now, because it was Rokeach. When he came,
the soups and the
when he came here, they settled in Boston. Mm-hmm. They came to New York and they settled in Boston. And the Yisrael Rokeach, who owned the company, said, "Look, you're there. We have a distributor there. Why don't you go work with them?" They set up a company. It's called SWB, Yisrael Wiener and Bard. My father-in-law brought the product, and that was his business. And they developed a very nice business in the kosher foods, like Canada Smaller used mm-hmm. to be here, same kind of thing. And the business exists to this day, and my nephews, grandchildren, still run involved in the business. But they're a lovely, lovely, wonderful family, and they all enjoy a very wonderful relationship together.
Well, how did you meet?
How did we meet? Did not tell you how we met?
I can't.
Yeah, we met at Camp Hampshire. I was head counselor at Camp Hampshire in Hightstown, New Jersey. And we had a former racket at that time. I had a convention. Hansi was about 18, I think, and she came with, we had like a chaperone. And friends came along, otherwise our friends wouldn't let it go. Valuable property there. So, and we met, and over the years, then I went into the army. My mother-in-law was always said, how old is Hansi? She was 22, I think. 23. So my mother-in-law would always say, you understand, Yiddish?
Yeah,
oh, but he's been in the army, Papa. He was in the army for
3 years.
That should think that she was.
Yeah.
No, we had we were not engaged. We had no understanding. But
did you write a lot during those years?
Oh, yeah. I used to write every day. Almost.
Oh.
We wrote. I still have letters. And we And when I got back to the States in January of 46.
Mm-hmm.
And we were married in June of 46. And my first trip was to Boston. And you'll laugh if I tell you that, of course, that time we used to travel by train.
Mm-hmm.
And at the theater, there were always, you see, in show business, there was always a lot of fat. There was a lot of money. I mean, people made money fast in the show theater. At that time, the house would gross $60,000 a week. That was tremendous. Now, $245,000, and they lose the money. So, the company managers who used to tour with these shows. I was a fair-haired kid who used to pat me on the head, you know, so they always had extra railroad tickets. Why? See, now they don't travel scenery anymore. It's all done by the film. At that time, you used to have two, three, four baggage cars. You got a show like Finian's Rainbow or South Pacific or My Fair Lady. You had what we used to call trucking the railroad into the scenery. So the railroads had a deal whereby if you bought, everybody traveled by rail, the whole cast. If you bought, the principals would get first class tickets, the other people would travel in coach, chorus, and so on. If you bought, let's say, 20 first class, I'm using that as an example, 20 first class tickets, for every 10 first class tickets you bought, you got a baggage car, free. So what they would do, they needed four baggage cars, they would buy 60 tickets. It didn't make any difference. The money was, it was small money anyway. So these guys always had tickets. So they say, you want to go, Donnie, you want to go to New York? There's a couple of tickets. I said, you can never get anything to Boston. One time, I'll never forget, I went to Boston by way of Springfield instead of going. That was the way the tickets were. Well, it was a fascinating time. And then when I went on the Romberg tour, I went to Boston as well. But it was, we were married in December, and we moved to Pittsburgh. We couldn't find an apartment right after the war. We moved in the second floor in somebody's home. We paid $45 a month rent. And that was,
And then where did you live after that?
Then we bought one of the Alderson apartments.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and I, my brother had just been married. His wife was married in September. We were married in June. We were married in September. And we bought one of the Alderson apartments, and we each took an apartment because you couldn't get anything.
Where was that? I don't know.
Right on Alderson Street, right?
That's probably
behind the, behind the Morrowfield apartments, mm-hmm. all those apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, we had that for many years. Until we moved here. This house is the old Hitchcock estate. You know, I mentioned to you, Hitchcock was the president of, chairman of Pittsburgh Plate Glass, PPG, it later became PPG. This house was owned by Thomas Edison's sister-in-law. And this was one big house. We redid the room about a quarter of an acre around the red carriage house. We did the house. We had two separate homes, and we had a duplex apartment. We had our apartment goes upstairs as well. We had about 10 rooms and 4 baths now.
Wow!
And it's very comfortable.
When did you move there? What year?
30 some years ago. Lonnie, our youngest daughter, was brought home from the hospital.
Tell us about your children.
Oh, in order, so I ran
the
town.
Oldest
to the
youngest. The oldest is Gail, whom we call Gippy. Whom in her early years we decided we were going to speak Hebrew on the children. So we did for a little while, but then the kids on the street would say, I was probably the first Abba in this town. Because the kids, oh, here comes your Abba, you know. And the kids would say, anyway, we.
What year was she born?
She was born in 48, mm-hmm. year of the establishment of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And she is now married and has 7 children. Mm-hmm. They live in New York. Her name is married to Jack Bendine. And she, last year, got her PhD.
In what?
In psychology. She felt that it was important for day schools to have psychological help for the students. And all of our kids are very positively Jewish, she went to Barnard, she graduated Barnard, and later continued on for a master's and got her doctorate this last year. Mm-hmm. And her daughter, Yoni, who just graduated, who just was married, graduated from Barnard.
Same time?
No, about a year later.
Mm-hmm.
But she was, so she got her degree from Yeshiva University for health school, for the Wurzbach School.
And who is your daughter married to?
Jack Bendine. Heard of Philip Brothers, Barbara?
Mm-hmm, sure.
That's the old friend. And they live in Riverdale. And they're very, very, very involved in the Jewish world. Jack is now one of the vice presidents of APAC. And Kitty is deeply involved in immigration and other things.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God they're good kids. And the grandchildren are great too. They're wonderful.
Grandchildren are great.
They're the best.
Mm-hmm. How many children do you have?
We have four. Two boys and two girls. Number two is David, mm-hmm. our son, who is a lawyer in Washington, D.C. Lives in Silver Spring. Very, very committed. He went to Yeshiva a number of years, and then to Georgetown Law School, and now, and he clerked for a judge, a very fascinating personality. He clerked for a federal judge in Chicago. His name was Abraham Lincoln Marowitz. This man has the largest collection of Lincoln memorabilia, Lincoln labilia, whatever you want to call it, in the world.
Hmm.
He was a congressman, he was a senator in Illinois, and later was appointed as a federal judge, and a very good friend of Daley, and it was a real political, never married, and he was touted to be the guy who wanted to run for governor. And his mother, he told me that to this day, he goes to the cemetery every other day. He's an old man now. He's a lovely, lovely personality. But his mother said to him, Avram, his name was Abram, Avram, being a judge is enough. Don't do it. He listened to her. Kerner was the one who became the governor. And you know what happened to Kerner? He was indicted. Marowitz used to go visit him in prison. So very curious. And he delivered the eulogy at Daley's funeral, which my son helped write for the word of Talmudic twist to it. He had a fascinating experience with Judge Marowitz, and now he's with a firm in Washington, and they have four children. Terrific kids, no question about it. And David was extremely active. He was president of the day school there, and later, now is the vice president of the federation there, in charge of disbursements,
allocations
committees. Very good boy.
Number three.
Wonderful granddaughter. He's with a firm that specializes in franchising.
Mm.
And he delivers symposia, workshops, but he's a crackerjack kid. And number three is the only one that went into a business is not good for a Jewish boy. He became a rabbi.
What's his name?
Rabbi Raphael Butler. He is the national director of NCSY, the National Conference of Synagogue Youth. And is now the national director of the OU, the Orthodox Union. And quite a scholar, a wonderful, wonderful boy. And he, we went to Russia. Those folks used to be in Russia. We went to Russia 2 years ago, August. And he organized, I'm being immodest when I say this, but it's important, kids should know this. We were in Moscow. There were about 40 or 50 of us who came from the United States. We brought a Sefer Torah to Russia to read there, dedicated, written especially for the Jews of Russia at a time when they were still under the gun, so to speak. And it was dedicated to Joe Miller. Joe Miller, who was a treasurer of the Orthodox and a very good friend of ours, was the one who was killed in the Pan Am crash. And the Sefer Torah was dedicated in his memory. And we took it to Israel, to Russia. We left it in Kiev, where that was the best Jewish community at that time, even now. And we were in Moscow, we were in Kiev, we were in Leningrad, we were in Pripyat, we were all over. But if I tell you that in the ceremony, in writing the Sefer Torah, the last several passages are left blank, just with an outline. The Sefer Torah has to be written by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a long time. And this was a commission specially be written. The last several passages are just outlined. They're not finished. And there is a ceremony that's called Siyum HaSefer, the completion of the Torah. Why do we do this? Jews are commanded, every Jew should write a Sefer Torah. But if I fill in a letter, it's as though I wrote it. So, and that's a very beautiful ceremony. We had one here at Politzedek about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. We had a Siyum HaSefer, which was a trimming, and you take the Sefer Torah, you carry it, you name picture, carry it under a canopy, under a football. It's a sacred object. And we bring it into the synagogue in a big parade. It's a beautiful ceremony. Well, in Russia, nobody understood this. We had over 5,000 Jewish people in Moscow at this ceremony. We had 7,000 in Kiev. We had 10,000 one night. 10,000. I have a video of this. 10,000 in the hockey stadium in Leningrad, where Jews literally danced and sang and came out of the closet, so to speak.
And this was in
1991?
When
Soviet Union was still
Soviet Union.
Yeah. It loosened up a little bit with Gorbachev. Mm-hmm. Because the announcement, this was on television. We had posters.
Dang.
I can show it.
This
poster. We took Shlomo Carlbach with us.
Oh!
This poster was taken. This is This was in the Leningrad synagogue. Now this is, they didn't know what see it. Simchas Torah they knew.
Yeah.
They knew in the early days they knew Simchas Torah, so they called it Simchas Torah.
Wow.
And here this is the and this tells her the sponsored by Orthodox Union from America. See. And these posters, this is, I guess it says Leningrad, I don't know. Leningrad here in Hebrew.
Oh, 1990.
Yeah, 1990. Here's Leningrad in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And the date, Menachem Lev, this month. This is the month of Lev in the Jewish mm-hmm. calendar. This month. They and these were posted, these were on the poles on the
wow.
streets. And
wow.
They had in Leningrad. Then the next, there were so many people they couldn't get in, and the next day they had about 3,000 people, of which about 1,100 to 1,500, I didn't go to that one, 1,100 to 1,500 people, lined up just to walk by to look at a Sefer Torah. I'd never seen a Sefer Torah. They had it open, and this was a fanatic, but this I've got to show. Excuse me for being so immodest, but I...
That's exciting.
I thrill.
Compelling.
I thrill when I talk about it. See this? You know who that is? That's Shlomo Carlebach, who is a guru there. Yeah. They follow him all over. This is called Masora.
Tell us about Shlomo Carlebach, future historian.
Shlomo Carlebach is the one who really turned Jewish music into Jewish music. He was the first one. And he's an old friend of ours. As a matter of fact, he sat in that corner, right there. What he always tells me that I was the first one to bring him to Pittsburgh. He said, I don't know if you ever paid me $50, something like that. Anyway, he was at a concert here, and I said to him, Shlomo, did you eat yet? He's a rabbi. I said, did you eat? He said, no, I just... He said, I had a banana. I said, well, look, after it's come to the house, we'll eat. So he says, yeah, but all these kids, you know, the university crowd, the kids, they just hovered over him. So I said, bring them along.
Oh, my God.
We had about 30 kids.
Your kid, I don't
think. We didn't have this furniture at that time. We had about 30 kids, and we sat down on the floor. Our third child, was a little baby. And we had everybody sitting around, and he had to have his atmosphere. He had to have candelabra, you know, like
Liberace. Yeah.
I'm telling the story about it. I don't know what this has to do with this, but I mean, about Carlebach being here. So, and he came with his guitar, and he strummed away, and the kids were saying, this street was jumping until about 2:00 in the morning, and our little Lonnie was awakened. I'll never forget, we always kid her about, she came down, she took one look at him with his beard and started to cry. At any rate, you asked me to tell you about Carlebach. Anyway, he today is an older man. But in Russia, they follow him in the streets, Rabbi Shlomo. I said to one of them, why do you like Rabbi Shlomo? It comes to my heart. Amazing. So this magazine was published in Russia by Masora, an observant group who published. So they covered our project. I can't read Russian. And this tells all about everything. You probably read Russian. Now I'm going to show you something. I was in New York and the guy says, well, Don, I want to show you something. See this there?
And here
I am.
Oh yeah, well that looks like you more.
Here I am. This is a Sofer, scribe, I couldn't fill in the letter. But in Jewish tradition, in Jewish law, if you send a messenger to do something, it's as though you did it yourself. Mm-hmm. Same thing, for example, the bris. Most people can't do the bris. Mm-hmm. But the mitzvah is for the father to do it. The father can't do it, so he sends a messenger. It's as though he did it. Same thing here. It's as though I did that.
Hmm.
And
I see.
This fellow is probably one of the wealthiest men in Mexico. This is Marcus Katz. He was there with us at the time. These are Russians.
Who is that?
This is Shimmy Questel, who was the president of the union at that time. Hmm. And this is the inscription here.
So this group that went was from the Union. I mean, it was not
Jews,
just Pittsburgh.
Jews from all over America.
Okay. North and South.
Who's this called? We gave them. We had food for them. It was a fantastic experience. Nancy and I went. We were on the boat here. In Moscow. It was a fascinating experience and an exhilarating experience to see so many Jews come out. And Rafi, our son, was the one who organized the whole thing.
He did?
Yeah, he was the one who arranged everything. It was an unbelievable experience. And he's married, and they have five children. married to a girl from Los Angeles. And they're wonderful, wonderful people.
And they live?
They live in New York.
They live
in Jamaica States.
Mm-hmm.
That's in Queens.
Mm-hmm. We have one more child. We got woken up, but we don't have too much.
Ilana is married to David Polkovich. David is the head of the child psychology department at North Shore Hospital.
In New York.
And Lonnie is a lawyer.
Yeah.
She also graduated Barnard. And she's a lawyer with a prestigious firm in New York, Shea Gould. And good kid, wonderful, wonderful children. And we spend a lot of time with them.
So how many grandchildren do you have altogether?
I'll give you the answer that Abe Tversky uses, and it's a good answer. Not enough. But they're all great, and we're enjoying them, and we're together quite a bit. As a matter of fact, just 2 weeks ago, we spent a week in New York, normally, because Rafi and his wife went to London. And we stayed with the kids. Wonderful experience. It's good, you know, grandparents are supposed to be the most carefree people with children, their children. That's why they say the grandparents should have had the children.
Right. You weren't worn out when you came?
No. They were at camp all day, and we ran around a little bit. That was very nice. Of course, Hansi, she threw the pattern away after her. So fantastic.
Does she still teach?
She is now the associate director, I think. She works with Tippi Gura, the Jewish head of the JEI.
Mm-hmm.
Hansi?
Yeah.
What's your title over there? You have one? Huh? What's your title at JEI?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The coordinator or whatever you want. Whatever it is. She's the top honcho next to Tippi Gura.
I'm actually assistant to the educational director.
That's good. Thank you.
Anybody want iced coffee? No?
I told him the story about our Israeli Rabbi Samuel Salam.
Yeah. Are you getting on, or are you going?
I don't know. We're rambling. She's got specific questions.
When would you give their birthdays? I'm sorry, you didn't.
Oh yeah. Their Gibby is in 1948.
Mm-hmm.
Dove is what?
50.
Rafi is 50.
Well, so he was born in
1950. April 18th, 1950.
And Rafi is
July
2nd.
52.
And Lana is the year we moved
the baby. 65.
That's the year we moved into this house.
55, excuse me.
We brought her home.
55.
Yeah, we brought her home to this.
You didn't waste much time there.
No.
7
years have passed.
Oh, wow. Would you tell us a bit about your family life in the early years?
It's the same as it is now. Wonderful. What can I tell you?
4 children in 7 years, yeah. I would think it would be a little...
How about some Mandelbrot, everybody?
In the interim, in 48, we were among the founders of the Little Academy.
Yes,
yeah.
You did.
That's
what
I know. And all your children went to Hillel Academy?
All went to Hillel. All graduated Hillel.
Mm-hmm.
David went on to Yeshiva in Philadelphia, and Rafi went to Yeshiva in Long Beach, and later spent many years in the Binnicker School, Kollel in New York. And, you know, it was a curious thing. I talked about this weeks ago. When Rafi and Pessy were engaged, we had a big reception Sunday afternoon, and our friendships in Pittsburgh run across all. I mean, the Reformed, the Conservative, we have We have a warm friendship with a lot of good people. So we had the party. And everybody must have had during the whole day, must have about 150 people in there. Anyway, so one of my very good, I'll tell you the name, you know who it is, one of my very good friend, reform person, says to me, Don, what's he going to do? He graduated, he's still going to yeshiva. So I had to think fast. I couldn't tell this fellow. The expression is going to sit and learn in the kollel. I said, he's getting a fellowship in advanced research in Talmud. I says, that's great. He says, wonderful. I'm paying the fellowship. I often think to myself, if I were to tell him he's going to sing, what's that for a Jewish boy to be doing sitting and learning? And he's quite a scholarly boy.